When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
Yeah, because he's in denial, but we're not. Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg. This is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about aging. And today we're going to have a couple of, you know, let's look in the mirror and face ourselves. We have a wonderful doctor on who's going to talk to us about epigenetics. What does that mean? Maybe he'd really look better. And when he looked himself in the mirror, if he knew how to eat right. So we're going to have Dr. Kate Shanahan with us, who's going to talk about deep nutrition and why your genes need traditional food. And you'll understand the 7 strategies to use. And then we're going to talk about what do you need to do if you really have to find somebody to help your mom and dad. Let's just get down to the jugular on that one with some really new and important information, not just same old, same old. Well, I really want to introduce you to Dr. Kate. We've been talking about the fact that if you go to generationboldradio.com, you can go to Ask Adrienne and tell me what you'd like to know. So for quite some time, we've been speaking about epigenetics, but most of the guests have some type of very long-term analysis where you have to go through your food and who you are, what your medications are. It's rather expensive. Other guests have different supplements that they have to discuss. But this guest is simply going to tell you how to eat right. Maybe the same things you're doing right now in a slightly different way with some surprises. So drkate.com, just go there. That's drkate.com. You'll get a lot more information because we're not going to be able to cover all this in the time we have together. But her latest book is Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food. And you'll be able to find that on Amazon or in your bookstores. It just came out in January. So thank you for being with us today, Dr. Kate.
Thank you, Adrienne. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I'm just going to ask you to give us the thumbnail definition of epigenetics before we dip into how food can change us in a good way.
Yeah, so the science of epigenetics describes the factors that bring DNA to life, essentially. So DNA is the letter code. That's kind of like the blueprint. But the way that blueprint operates is mediated by a lot of outside factors, including everything we eat, drink, think, and do. And that's the science of understanding that relationship is called epigenetics. That's a broad definition of it.
Yeah, and what we've been learning is that we think that our genes or our DNA are fixed, but we've learned that A, you may actually be able to change them, but B, more often, some are suppressed, maybe some of the ones like cancer that we don't want to come to the fore. We can suppress them, or we can trigger them by exactly what Dr. Kate is saying. But one of the main players, and she knows this because of her book and her research in deep nutrition, is food. So I want to get down to the jugular. You have 7 strategies, but I want to look at 2 of them, Dr. Kate, that we rarely talk about. And don't laugh. Come on. Organ meat. Yes. Everybody's telling you never have liver and never have this and that. They even tell you not to have meat at all. But that's not what Dr. Kate says. She says get nasty. What do you mean by that?
So celebrity chef Anthony Bourdain calls organ meats the nasty bits, and just kind of referring to the fact that they are very powerful tasting, and if you don't know how to cook them, they do end up being nasty. It takes a lot of chefly skill in order to make even just something as simple as chopped liver taste good. You have to really know what to do with those things because any kind of food that's so loaded with nutrition is going to have a very strong flavor, and you have to know what to do to make that flavor like not overwhelm the person who is eating it. But organ meats are good for us because, you know, if we just eat an animal's muscle tissue, we're getting a lot of really good protein. And, you know, maybe if it's red meat, we're getting some iron. But the organs of an animal's body each have a different, like, collection or spectrum of nutrients that our bodies need. And, you know, we're all familiar. You've probably heard the nutritionists say when it comes to vegetables, you want to eat your rainbow, right? Different colored vegetables,
yes,
like
exactly.
Purple and orange, because each one has a different spectrum of nutrients. Well, the very same concept applies to all of the organs in an animal's body. And in fact, if you go around the world and, you know, street food anywhere in Asia, all over Africa, and in places like France and China, you're going to see people eating every single last bit of the animal, and they're not batting an eyelash like we would here, like we'd be all, you know, wrinkling our noses and saying,
right.
Ew, what's
sure,
that?
Sure.
But they grew up eating it, and it's extremely healthy. And our genes have come to expect all that kind of nutrition, so that when we don't get our genes something that they're expecting one too many times, that's when we get sick.
You know, it's very interesting. We've had several doctors on, and I just came back from Environments for Aging, which is a huge conference in Las Vegas. And the keynoter was a very famous doctor who actually will be on the show, and he works with aerospace and astronauts. And he said exactly the same thing, Dr. Kate. He said that we have to eat prehistoric. And yet, I have to tell you, I used to have liver and onions as a kid. My mother made it once a week. And then eventually I would hear, it's not good for you. You're too much cholesterol. You got to stay away from liver. You got to stay away from sweetbreads and bone marrows. And now it's coming back. Is this just trendy or what's going on?
Well,
where
what happened
the truth
was
here?
That, so, yeah, so here's the truth, right? So deep nutrition is actually the opposite of a fad diet, because all we're doing is getting people back to the diet that we were all on and that we abandoned very recently. We abandoned it when we started hearing things like, oh, saturated fat is going to clog your arteries. Oh, cholesterol causes heart attacks. And actually, the reason I call the book Deep Nutrition is because we wanted to go deeper than those oversimplified sound bites that I learned in medical school and that we all hear many, many times as we grow up, that are, you know, are superficial explanations for these complex diseases that we've developed. And what it turns out is that everybody who seriously studies nutrition and its connection to health comes to the same conclusion, and that is that the modern diet is what's killing us, and that if we just get back to what we were doing before, we'd all be healthier. And so what deep nutrition does is we systematically analyze two things. One is, what is it about the modern diet that makes it so unhealthy? But two, and perhaps even more important, is what were we doing before? Because although everyone kind of agrees that the modern diet is killing us, we can't yet come to a really strong agreement on what we should be doing instead. And our argument is, let's just go back in time a little bit. We don't have to go back to the paleo era. We don't have to eat like cavemen. We should just eat like chefs, or think like chefs, or think like your grandmother, or if you had somebody in your family who was like in love with food and cooking and always trying to get you to try new things and get the most flavorful foods into you. That's what we want people to start doing again. That's what we used to do. That's why we're here. Chefs are the original nutritionists, and what the science of epigenetics is telling us is exactly how we create these needs based on what our genes have had in the past. They have a memory, and they come to expect certain sets of nutrients, and if we don't give our genes those nutrients, that's when they get sick. So the deep nutrition diet really just describes in a very systematic way what every traditional culture around the world has in common, so that we can reproduce it ourselves.
Now, it's very, very logical, and it's not that difficult to do. Take another look at drkate.com. The book, of course, is Deep Nutrition.
It's D-A-T-E. I'm sorry to interrupt.
D-A-T-E.
Sorry.
D-A-T-E.
Sorry, Adrian.
All right, Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Traditional Foods, drkate.com. Now, we have about a minute before our first break, but I did want to go to the word genes. You have another strategy here, eat fermented and sprouted foods. And I was explaining that I'm just beginning to eat fermented pineapple, because it was sent to me, actually, as part of the show. They wanted to know if I would let somebody come on and talk about it as a guest. And I always try things first before I do that, so I'm not going to tell anybody about it yet. So far, so good. But it is my first regular fermented item that I'm eating on a regular basis, trying it out. I'm taking one for the team, Dr. Kate. We'll see what happens. But you really like that. And you see it has the effect on the genes.
It does. So fermented foods include foods like yogurt and traditionally brined dill pickles. And they're special because of the good bacteria that are living on them, and that when we eat them, we allow those good bacteria to grow inside our gut. And this relationship between the bacteria and our intestinal tract.
We're going to be talking about it just a minute. This is what always happens. We end up not enough time, but we have another segment. You're going to hear 5-1 strategies, and then you're going to increase your longevity with them. We'll be right back.
That doesn't bother me, not even a bit, 'cause I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg. This is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And I always tell you that if you go to generationboldradio.com to ask Adrian, you will be able to create your own show, and you're actually doing that today. We have two guests today. We're speaking right now with Dr. Kate, and she is the author of Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food. Flat Iron Books is the publisher. And, of course, you can go to Amazon. You can go to your bookstore and ask for it. But this really is at your request. You were very interested in epigenetics, but you wanted to see what you can do just with food, not with supplements, not with deep analysis with a doctor, and we have that right for you today. So Dr. Kate has been telling us that her view is to eat the way we used to, eat like a chef, understand that flavors, old types of food, old-timey foods can make a real difference to your genetics. That's why we're here. And she's been talking about things we rarely talk about, organ meats, fermented foods, because of their good bacteria. But I'm going to throw it back to you now, Dr. Kate. One of the interesting things, I think, on your list that affects genetics is homemade bone stock. I'm not even sure I have a pot to make that in. You thought I was going to say something else. But what is this and why?
So bone stock is really like chicken stock or beef stock. And a lot of folks, actually, if you save your turkey carcass after Thanksgiving or Christmas, and you just boil it up that the meat that's like the leftover meat with the bones, and cook a turkey soup. That's the same idea. You're getting the nutrients from the bone, and particularly from the cartilage and ligaments and those wiggly white things at the ends of the bone. You extract the nutrients from those, and they go into the broth, and they're really, really good for your joints and for your skin because of the way there's chemicals in there that you're extracting that actually act like hormones that wake up the cells of your skin and your joints and other connective tissues in your body that help keep your skin, you know, glowing and help keep your joints supple. And they actually taste good. So this is I work with the Los Angeles Lakers, and this bone stock stuff is one of the absolute favorites of the athletes because, first of all, it tastes really good. And secondly, you know, a lot of times they don't even know they're getting it, actually. But the chef will make, like, soups, vegetable soup purees with chicken stock very often, and they just love it. They lap it up. And it really helps them feel better. Like, once people have been getting bone stock on a regular basis, their joints, they really do notice, you know, if they don't have it for a few days, they're like, oh, this is kind of back the way I was. I forgot how achy I used to be. And then, you know, you get it back in your body, and literally the next morning you wake up feeling better.
I'm going to concentrate on this for a minute here because I would say that my radio audience is the achiest radio audience in America. So I definitely want to talk to you about this. You're listening to Catherine Shanahan. Dr. Shanahan is a board-certified family physician. I wanted to talk about her book so much I forgot to tell you what a great star she is. Biochemistry, Genetics, Cornell University, Robert Wood Johnson. She works in clinics in Denver, Colorado. And with the Lakers, their nutrition program. So we're talking to a heavy hitter. and she's not saying the same things that everybody else says. I will be honest with you. I don't cook. And I can do all of these things in the restaurant because, thankfully, I can afford to do that. But is that okay?
Yeah.
Is going to a restaurant and getting bone stock or going to a fancy, you know, gourmet supermarket and buying their chicken soup, is that okay? Or do you really have to cook this stuff?
It's absolutely okay as long as they're making it right. And so the way that they make it right is to use the bones and that shiny material at the end of the bones or skin. Chicken feet is another fantastic source of this collagen. And the one thing that you have to be careful of when you go to a restaurant or when you eat anything prepared is you should ask if they can make whatever it is you want to order without vegetable oils, because vegetable oils like corn oil and canola and soy and palm, these are going to create a lot of oxidative stress in the body, and oxidative stress ages us faster and it makes us feel terrible. So that's kind of like the pitfall of going out to eat. And I there are a few restaurants in every city, every major city, that use better quality fats, the traditional fats like the olive oil or even butter, lard, and tallow. These are traditional fats that have always been used, were never bad for us. We were lied to by the folks who had connections to processed food industry and wanted us to eat their cheap vegetable oils.
Yeah,
vegetable oils are like one-tenth the cost.
Yeah, I think we know that we get, it's not easy to do, but I think we get that. I think what we don't get about the oils is, like you say, soy. I'm totally confused. I hear it's the best thing to do, and I hear that it's toxic. What's your take on that one?
Well, we have to make sure that we're talking about the soy oil, right, and not soybeans. And so
or
I'm
soy
talking
sauce.
About the soy oil.
Soy milk.
Right, exactly.
Milk?
Or any of the other things you can make with soy milk. Well, I'm just talking about the oil. And the reason it's bad is because of the way it's processed. It's a highly processed industrial product, and there's high heat, pressure, and chemicals that damage the molecules in soy oil, which are very fragile. They happen to be very much more fragile than the molecules that are in butter, and they just cannot handle heat, but they are extensively heated. And then when we go to a restaurant and have deep fried food, that is the worst of the worst in the restaurant. So if you like to go out to eat, just it's really important to avoid anything deep fried, unfortunately, unless they can tell you they're using peanut oil or olive oil, which some actually do.
I just lost a fight with my husband just this minute. Because I used to say peanut oil isn't good, and he loves that peanut oil. He says, my mother always cooked with peanut oil. All right. I have to give a shout-out to my Aunt Rose. She's the one who made chicken feet, liver, and onions in the home, and all the things, honestly, that you're talking about. Pickles, she used to do her own pickling. My mother would take a piece of meat and put it in the toaster. That's how I learned that. That's why I don't know how to cook. I was watching.
That doesn't sound very delicious.
Yeah, it's not an exaggeration. Unless you're a lion and they're throwing it over the fence to you in the zoo, you don't want to eat my mother's cooking. Yeah, but or mine. So let's just wrap up with this. We are speaking with Dr. Kate, drcate.com, because I know you're going to want more information. The book is Deep Nutrition, Why Your Genes Need Traditional Food. And in about half a minute, one of the things you do give us is a general rule. Is equate real flavor with nutrition. So just give us that bottom line, because maybe it'll give us an easy way to pick the right foods.
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of folks crave things like Doritos or other snack chips because they have intense flavors, but we can get those same intense flavors from actual food when we're cooking it. And we have a lot of resources on our website that will teach you how to get, like, whatever flavor you happen to be craving, you can recreate it with real food, and that you'll get real nutrition from it. We also have resources about, like, which oil and how to get bone stock cheap and all that kind of stuff.
That's wonderful, and we will be going there. We'll be back. How about you have an issue? You can't give it. We'll cater to you in just a moment. We feel the pain. We have a solution. Don't go away.
I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. That doesn't bother me, not even a bit. 'Cause I am happy and
hello, hello, hello again. And I promised you that if you're a caregiver and you are struggling with the issues of what to do with mom, pop, or your older loved one, and you're really fed up with all the alternatives, that I was going to give you a solution. And we have that solution with us right now. His name is Bruce Masterson. He is the founder of Respect, which itself is a beautiful name. And it is a way of getting you and your loved one together with the right at-home caregiver so that you can have your peace of mind and they can thrive at home. And that's the purpose of Respect. Why not? So, Bruce, I'm going to introduce you right away. He is a CEO. He knows what he's talking about. He's been working with multinationals. But he's brought all of that business expertise to a very personal subject, and that is caregiving. Bruce, what was your motivation in looking of all the industries you could have worked in? Why this one?
Well, probably the biggest one was working with and taking care of both my parents for a number of years. And then they were relatively close, and then taking care of my mother-in-law, who is in Boston, and just the difficulty in trying to find a quality caregiver, and then knowing what was happening day to day, without flying out to Boston, you know, on a very regular basis, we really didn't know what was happening. So that was very frustrating.
Yeah, well, that's not an atypical story, and I know you have a lot of tips for the listeners on what to look for and how to find a good caregiver. But I really do want to talk about Respect for a moment, the company. There are other choices, but this is something that you're committed to, and you saw a hole in the market. For many years, I've been going to the electronic show in Las Vegas. It's the biggest trade show, and they have digital health pavilion, and they have a silver health pavilion. And I knew that one day technology and aging in place were going to come together, and basically that's what you've done. Can you explain that to everybody?
Well, really, when we look at it, we knew that technology is an important element, but by itself, it's just not really enough. This is a very high-touch business, and it's a very personal business. So we started out by reimagining home care, requiring a combination of thinking how the industry works and the tools people use to help aging seniors. So we looked at the caregivers are traditionally underpaid. They don't get the respect they deserve. And we went out to try to find the best caregivers we could. And so as a result, we make life very difficult on our recruiters. We only take one in every 25 applicants. So that was kind of the initial base, was finding the best caregivers, because without that, you have nothing. Then we went on and looked at how can we combine those high caregiver standards with innovative technology on joinrespect.com. So we really wanted to give clients and their families more control, more visibility into the care, and allow the clients to choose their caregivers using our mobile apps and get the real-time updates from caregiver visits so they really are involved and know what's going on.
Now, one of the things I know from you is that there's actually videos online, so you can see and hear a caregiver before you choose them. Actually, it's a little bit deeper, and I guess it should be deeper than Match.com's and all those others because, you know, you're putting somebody's life in somebody else's hands. And you need that peace of mind. So you do that very thoroughly. But I was also very interested in one big differentiator, and that is how you use technology so that the loved one and the family member can really track what's going on. And that's very, very innovative, I thought. So let everybody understand that.
Right. So what we do is we require all of our caregivers to have smartphones, and we geo-track them, which means think of it like an Uber car. So we start tracking them about a half an hour before they're supposed to arrive, so we know what's going on and have a good view. So if there is a problem, we're ahead of it. But also we give that same information to our clients and their families. So let's say if you're at work on the radio station, someone's coming to your mom's house this morning at 9 o'clock, and you want to make sure they're there. You don't want to worry about it. You can open up the app and see the caregiver arriving at your parents' house. So it really gives you that complete peace of mind that things are happening the way they should be happening.
You know, I do a lot of interviews on this show. We've been on for many years. And every once in a while, somebody says something that where I get a real sadness because my mom died at home, and she was on the phone. We were in another state, all of us. And we called a caregiver, and they did not come. She died. She then fell, and that was that.
Right.
So I carry this with me all my life. It's 9 years, and it's 2 or 3 times a day, what could I have done comes to my head. Everybody knows this. What you just said brought that on again to me, because imagine knowing where the caregiver is, how far away the caregiver is, how long it's going to take for them to get there. And if you feel that there is an emergency in your home, or there's something that is really needed, maybe your loved one's just hungry and they're not there in time for lunch. In my case, it was a real emergency. Imagine knowing that. How wonderful would that be? And the ability to use technology for that is really something. Now, I want to go back, though, to that word respect, because you said something. I was speaking with Bruce Masterson, who is one of the masterminds. With, I guess, Kim, is it Kimborovsky? Ross Kimborovsky?
Ross Kimborovsky, yes, my partner.
Yeah, is your co-founder. Let's go back to that word respect. You just said, you know, it's an industry where caregivers, meaning the professional caregivers, aren't given enough respect. How true? And what do you do to make that difference? Do you think that because you've called it respect, it makes a difference in who applies?
I think that makes a little bit of difference. I think what makes a much bigger difference is the fact that we give the caregiver much more control over their life. So they tell us how far they want to go from home for any assignment. They tell us what hours they want to work and what days they want to work. And we respect that. We don't ask them to take an assignment that's outside those boundaries. That's part of our matching algorithm. When a client comes in and either goes through the app or just calls us, which obviously we respect that part as well, because not everybody likes technology, but we'll use it in the background. When they tell us what they're looking for, we come back with a curated choice of two or three caregivers. Now, what happens next is that request goes out to the top care, the first caregiver, the first choice. That caregiver can look at the assignment and say, you know what, I don't want that assignment. Maybe they've had dementia training, and in whatever agency they've been in, they only see dementia clients. Well, with respect, we give them the ability to look at it and say, no, I need a break. I'm not taking another dementia client right now. So that level of just giving them control and treating them like adults makes a big difference. But also, we pay them about 20 to 30% more than our competitors do. And we're able to do that because we've built a lot of efficiencies into our system.
So I'm going to tell you that one reason I wanted you to discuss this was many of our listeners listen with two hats. One is that they are caregivers and they really need the service of respect. The other is they're looking for work. We do have a lot of people, and I have many statistics showing that the older adult, meaning 40-plus, when they even retire a little bit earlier in life, they like to go into this field. And so the problem is, as you say, it can be underpaid and it can be overworked. So it's always good to know a resource to apply to, even though you take one in 25. If you've been thinking about this, folks, because we have talked about this as a second career for many of us, here's another avenue. Here's another opportunity for you. So before we have to take a break, what's the websites? Are they the same for both the consumer and the person who might want to apply to be a professional caregiver?
They are the same. It's joinrespect.com. And on the homepage, it's an easy choice between we ask you, are you a caregiver or are you looking for care? So it's very easy to navigate, and they can easily find their way through for the caregiver. The application process is all online, as you would expect with us. And then we go into the more personal side of it, where we start interviewing. We do a couple rounds of interviews. We do the video itself. And all along the way, we're looking for those traits that make a great caregiver.
Now, I want to remind everybody, and I think it's a good time to remind you of this, is that March is fun month, and we've been doing fun things. And you might think, you know, we had folks today with regard to cooking your own food and how it helps in genetics. We've had stars, Broadway stars this month. But one of the things I want to talk to Bruce Masterson about when we come back after our break is respite care. What happens when you want to have some fun? You want to go on that 7-day river cruise, but you just don't have peace of mind because mom is living at home with a caregiver who is coming in a certain number of hours a day, maybe taking them to day care. We're going to find out exactly what the services are and what you can do for peace of mind so you can have some of that fun. We rarely talk about respite care from the point of view of the family member, but it's fun months, so we got to get you guys out of the house. I will tell you that I've met so many people on my speaking tours that come to me, and this is true, and say, I have a 95-year-old mom. I'm 60 or 65 years old. I can't move. I would like to change my residence and downsize, go to a community, but I can't do it because my mom is around. Well, it shouldn't be a burden. It should be a joy. When we come back, we'll help you make it a joy with the help of respect.
And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy. And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg. We are back again, unbelievably, for our last segment of the show. We're speaking with Bruce Masterson, who is the co-founder of Respect, and that is a very high-tech, but don't worry, you don't have to be tech-savvy yourself, way of selecting a caregiver for your older loved one and getting your own peace of mind and even being able to select one in the right way and track them to make sure they're doing exactly what they should be doing. What I want to cover today, Bruce, before we have to leave you, is the ways that you can use a caregiver in your home. I think people have a very myopic way. They wait till the last minute, till it's just too much of a burden for the family. They're all stressed out, and then they start to worry about its costs, and everything is very, very rush and last minute. I don't know if you've seen it, Bruce, but on Broadway there's a new show called If I Forget, and I actually saw it last night. And it revolves around what a family has to do when their older adult, in this case the father, had a stroke, and what they do to avoid getting a caregiver. So it's such an important situation that it's even now being written on, you know, by playwrights and so on. What can you use Respect for? What can you use caregivers for?
Caregivers, I mean, most of our caregivers are certified nursing assistants, so they have a little bit more skill than just kind of a typical person on the street. But the services that they provide include companionship. So we have a client that loves to play Yahtzee, and he and his caregiver play Yahtzee at least 3 times a week. So it's that kind of thing is a little bit different. You wouldn't expect that. Cooking. So often they'll cook a favorite dish for one of our clients, or help the client themselves prepare that kind of dish. So it really gets them involved and gets them, you know, back into the swing of things. Light housekeeping, so, you know, not scrubbing the floors, but, you know, certainly light vacuuming, taking out the trash, you know, making things are tidied up, dusted, etc. Medication reminders, you know, often, you know, our clients might forget what their medication should be, what order they should take them in. Well, our caregivers are there to remind them, you know, when to take their meds on the schedule and which meds to take so they don't get confused. I had a client a few weeks ago that's here in Chicago that he ended up in the hospital, unfortunately, because he wasn't a client then and got mixed up on his meds and took the wrong meds. So that's an important one. Personal care, you know, everything from bathing, grooming, even brushing teeth, that type of thing, if the care recipient is unable to do those for themselves. A lot of times, our caregivers will end up getting, you know, doing nail polish for the ladies and, you know, doing their hair, and they absolutely love that because it's like going to the beauty parlor at home. Transportation, so that's another area that, you know, until the self-driving car is fully here,
right,
our clients need that capability to get around. It gives them mobility, it gives them freedom. They can go where they want to, and our caregivers can provide that transportation. And then finally, just wellness checks to make sure they're okay.
Uh-huh.
So.
Yes, you know, one of the things that I was speaking on at the EFA, that's Environments for Aging, last week, is their big conference in Vegas, was beyond the physical. Spirituality, creativity, play, all the things that we need to thrive as we age, even with dementia care. And certainly when we don't have those issues, when we don't have cognitive issues, the ability to give back and contribute to the community. So if you have somebody, if your biggest problem is mobility and you just can't get out, and you really do want to make a contribution or be part of maybe a club that's outside of the home, it becomes very difficult to thrive when you can't get out. So a safe, professional person who can help mom or dad get to adult daycare, get to maybe the Yahtzee club, these kinds of things, that's what really makes a difference in life, in addition to being able to do the skills of daily living so that you can live your best life. Tell us one more time the website for Respect, and then I'm going to ask you about a couple of hints and tips that I'm interested in. Once again, what is the website, Bruce?
Our website is Join Respect, J-O-I-N, Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T, and I always feel like Aretha Franklin when I say that, .com.
Very good. Well, I'll tell you, hints and tips. I'd like you to talk about safety for a minute. That is one of the most important things. People are scared to bring somebody into the home. So how do you cover that issue?
Actually, we cover safety in a couple different ways. One is the first thing that we do is we have a nurse go out and they actually do a case assessment, which includes a review of the home to make sure that the home itself is safe. So there's about 20 or 30 questions we go through to make sure even simple things like, you know, throw rugs aren't where the person has to walk, so because they can fall and hurt themselves. But that's the first thing that we do, kind of the first layer. The second layer is probably even more important. It's really looking at, starting with the caregiver, you know, what kind of individual are they? So we do a 7-year background check, every county they've lived in, plus federal, plus state. We do a full drug and alcohol screen, and we do random drug and alcohol screens. We're constantly looking at, well, how can we make sure that the person that's going into your home or going to your mom's home is someone that you can trust and that you can feel comfortable with.
Now, you know, do you believe in the webcam, in having a webcam in the home? Sometimes people feel that it's an invasion of privacy of their loved one. It may sound good, but, you know, the older adult doesn't always want a webcam. What do you think about that?
Honestly, I'm not crazy about having a webcam tracking me all the time.
Yep.
And I don't think that your mom or dad would be that crazy about it either. I mean, there are other ways to do that in terms of keeping in touch, everything from the life pendants to, you know, other devices and sensors just to keep track of that. And we're constantly looking at ways to use that technology. So it's non-invasive. It's not cutting into their personal space or their privacy. And yet still can monitor, has the individual fallen, you know, and are they active?
You know, as we conclude here, I just want to say this to everybody listening. Those of you who have used home caregivers and have had a bad experience with home caregivers, take a look at Respect. But more importantly, it's the people who haven't yet, who maybe can't talk mom and dad into having somebody come home every once in a while, but they know that that's really going to be helping them thrive. It's that you have to get over. I just want you to get rid of the guilt for a minute and make sure that they really have the life that they can love, not just the one that they're too stubborn to accept. That's a personal hint about what happened to me. So thank you so much, Bruce, for being with us. We have to conclude our show for the day, but I think you've really illuminated some of the ways that technology can help us age in place and help us as caregivers. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will be back next week. And you know what I'm going to say? Get out there, kids, and make it happen. It's fun.